Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, December 26, 2014. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We get to do New Year next week. Woohoo!
Hard to imagine all that fun in just a period of a week or 10 days.
How about that?
It's almost like going to Disney World.
I don't think there are 2 days of New Year's music that the listeners can listen to, can they? I don't think they made that many New Year's songs.
No, I don't think so. I can't even think of any. I suppose there are some, but I can't think of one.
Can't remember Auld Lang Syne.
I guess that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that hasn't been done by any rock bands or anything like that.
By Miley Cyrus. Or
I know she's twerking
group.
To Auld Lang Syne.
Well, that's tickled us.
You don't know. It's just crazy.
Well,
Christmas. We have New Year's. We got Columbus Day, President's Day. When do we have Lunatics Day?
Oh,
I think that's one we should have in this country. Something for lunatics.
Sounds like a plan. Think we can lobby Congress?
If you got enough money, you can you can lobby them for anything you want. If you got the money, they got the paper. Yeah.
Maybe we've been going around it the wrong way. Maybe we ought to open up a fund that people can donate to, and we use it to lobby for our rights back from Congress.
Huh? Yeah, never catch
think
on.
Think that'll work? You don't think
nah,
that'll catch
never
on?
Catch on.
It's probably not enough money in the world.
Yeah, you got to lobby for something that makes money, not rights. People don't really care that much about their rights.
True.
They do care about money.
Very
you
true.
You could find a way, the way to get this done is if you could guarantee a bonus of, let's say, $1,000 to anyone who asserts his constitutional rights under any circumstance to get $1,000. All right, now we would have people standing up and fighting for liberty and justice and
mm-hmm,
so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should open that fund for You know, and we'll begin it on a particular day. We'll have to think about it. But today, I'm sure the listeners are waiting for the gold prices. I mean, there was very light trading today. So, you know, gold was up 1770 today on the New York spot, up 1.5% at 1195. Silver was up 26 cents at $16.15. Platinum was up 24 at 1221. And palladium was up 5 at $821. USDX today was up 0.10 at 90.03. Crude oil was down almost a buck, down 97 at 54.87. And of course, the paper markets, the last time I had an opportunity to view the paper markets, they were all to the upside. And they did finish that way. They ended the week higher, which I don't think anybody had any doubt. The Dow was up, 58 points at 18,082. The NASDAQ was up 33 at 4,006. The S&P up 6 at 2,088. 10-year yield, 0.03 at 2.29%. I think one of the most ridiculous headlines I saw for the year. And the headline, I'm sure if anybody goes to money.cnn.com, shows Trump, you know, we all know his wealth and so forth, whether that be real or imaginary or an illusion that he's created, but he's still got some buckaroos there. And he has a sour look on his face. And the headline is, the most 1% struggles of 2014. So the article was all about how the 1%, how all their
trials and tribulations
of the 1%. And it was like, are you serious?
Do you, maybe we should start a fund to help the super rich?
Maybe.
We, instead of contributing to Congress, they get enough money of their own. We could start a little fund to, you know, there's super rich people out there who just don't have enough for a third corporate jet, and we need to contribute to them, make sure they can get that third jet.
But, you know, it's just, you know, one of them was, I don't know who it was, Tom Perkins. He's a venture capitalist. They compared him to, I believe, some Nazi or something like that. He took a public beating. He likened the experience of the 1% in the U.S. to fascist Nazi Germany. And that was in a letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal in January.
Does he mean that they're being subjected to fascism, or does he mean that they're participating in fascism?
He likened the experience of the 1% in the U.S. to fascist Nazi Germany.
Yeah. You know, still, I don't know. You know, I mean, there were the Jews, they were subject to the fascists, and there were some of the wealthy that were associated with the fascists, maybe many of the wealthy. I'm not sure from the description you've read that which way he's talking about, but I would agree with him that there is more than a little bit of fascism going on in this country. The definition of fascism is roughly an association, a close association between corporations and government, and they run the country for the benefit of the corporations. The corporations help run the government. The government runs the people for the benefit of the corporations. The corporations support the government, but there is an intimate relationship between corporations and government rather than between the government and the people. And that is appears to be increasingly the case here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Here's another one of their tribulations, trials. When a $20,000 handbag, woman's handbag, smelled like a skunk.
Oh, no. If there's anything I hate, Melody, it's women with $20,000 handbags that smell a little skunky.
And then they had to send them back to Paris and just wait for months.
Do you know how much it costs to send a skunky purse all the way across the Atlantic to Paris? That might be $50, Melody.
Mm. You know, awful.
You've got to pay an extra $50 on a $20,000 purse. You know, I went out for dinner years ago. My second wife, myself, and friend of mine, and his girlfriend. His girlfriend was a doctor, and she was extremely wealthy. All right, and she showed she had a new purse. And she showed it to my ex-wife. And it had a duck on it. All right? I don't remember the name of it, but it had a picture of a duck head on a little tab on this thing. She paid something like $1,500 for that purse. And this would be back, this was in the 90s. This might have been 20 years ago. Yeah, it probably was, 20 years ago. And she told us, and she said how much she paid for that purse. And I just broke out laughing. I've had cars that didn't cost $1,500, Melody, and she had a purse that cost $1,500, and it just cracked me up. What the $1,500 purse? You got more money than you need, ma'am, you know?
Well, here's, speaking of divorce, oil billionaire Harold Hamm was ordered to pay his wife, Sue Ann, $1 billion in their divorce. But she scoffed at that amount because $1 billion just ain't what it used to be.
Yeah, that's a problem, all right.
Isn't that a problem? Oh.
I have the same problem.
How terrible.
Here in Texas, $1 billion, it just doesn't go as far as it used to.
Yeah.
You know, the rising costs, the quarter pounders with cheese and I don't know.
Long John sandwiches,
Long John Silver sandwiches and fish. And,
all right.
How do you make it on less than $1 billion, Melody?
I don't know. But if someone would care to give me $1 billion, I would love to test it and find out.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
sure.
Yeah.
Here's another one. I don't know why I'm going through this. They're really kind of disturbing at the most, these idiots. A Manhattan developer's plan to build a separate entrance for low-income residents of a luxury condominium building, a poor door, was green-lighted by the city.
Why did they call it a great unwashed door?
Ironically, the building's 55 low-income units were included in the project as part of the inclusionary housing program, and that was in an effort to mitigate the inequality by offering affordable housing in nice areas. So,
oh, that's just great!
Isn't that?
It's the
nice
best of both worlds. You got the mm-hmm. projects, and you've got Trump Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the two of them kind of welded there together, and I'm sure they just love the people who live in the Trump Tower part. Just love coming in 2 o'clock in the morning when some of the neighbors in the project section of the building mm-hmm. hanging around in the lobby, maybe in the elevator, the hallways.
Now here's the billionaire. We're talking about billionaires, okay? This guy, Mike Sorrentino, was indicted for failing to pay taxes on nearly $9 million of income. According to the indictment, Sorrentino claimed expensive cars, fancy clothes, and personal grooming expenses of legitimate business costs.
Well,
a lousy $9 million when you have $1 billion.
Yeah, I understand that. But, you know, that's one of the things about getting rich. If you're really going to get rich, you got to be tight. All right? You don't spend a nickel. I mean, rich people...
Not when you're billionaires. When you're a billionaire, you're lucky. You're an insider. These billionaires, they're all insiders.
Well, I don't know what they are, but they're no, they're not relatives of mine, or I would have heard. You know, in fact, I would have even been there for Christmas. Right? But whoever they are, they're not connected. We have no familial contacts or connections with billionaires.
And then one more, and we'll move on. China Jack Ma, the Alibaba founder, you know, he was explaining, I think everyone has heard this before, that being a billionaire is a great pain because when you're the richest person in the world, everyone is surrounding you for money.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, these rich people, they suffer. You know, people don't understand the burdens. And that's why Congress passes special laws to let them have even more money, because of the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
The Congress feels their pain. You understand, Melody? They especially feel it when they give them bribes. Then they, oh my gosh, how you must have suffered. Yeah.
You know, it used to be, you used to associate wealth with hard work. You know, people who gave, people who sacrificed, you know, in order to become wealthy, and they were smart, and they used their brains. Now, when you look at some of these billionaires, I mean, how much work? It's all investments. It's all being part of the inside.
It's part of bribing government is what it comes down to. There is an enormous amount of wealth around the world. I don't mind anyone being a billionaire. You can make as much money
Absolutely.
As you want. I have no objection to that.
I don't either.
But if you're making that money based on your ability to lobby and give political campaign contributions to congressmen, senators, and presidents, then you've made your money based on bribery. All right? And I don't like that in the least. I don't accept any excuse for it. You don't get to lobby to get Congress to pass more laws to allow you to raid, loot, and rob the middle class and the lower classes. That's the way it happens, however, in this country, in my opinion, to an increasing, to an increasing degree, and that's wrong. I don't care if you made $1 billion, hard work, hard effort, fine, keep it. That's good for you. If you've made it based on bribing your local congressman, or you're part of an industry who's made it by bribing congressmen, all right, you're not entitled to that money. And I'm not going to have any sympathy for these people when the time finally comes when they're going to start passing laws that say we're going to tax the rich. If you have made your money by bribing Congress, I don't care if they take all your money, as far as I'm concerned. If you've made your money honestly in the free market, that's another story. I'm not interested in taxing the rich in the free market, but better living through legislation, it just shouldn't be that way.
And I think we have one more holiday story.
I got one here.
Yeah.
Now, Wisconsin man celebrates 40 Christmases with one tree.
Yes.
Wausau, Wisconsin. Neil Olson put up a Christmas tree when his two sons went off to Vietnam War in 1974. Vowing not to take it down until all six children returned to his Wisconsin home for Christmas. The same tree, he says, is still standing in his living room. You get that? One Christmas tree, one set of ornaments, only set up once, not taken down ever. 40 years. I'm a frugal guy, Melody, but this guy's got me beat by miles. You understand? Same tree for 50. In fact, the problem was this. Olson's oldest son was injured in Vietnam. His disability has stopped him from returning to Wausau from Washington State for Christmas. So the tree has stayed up, still covered with the same ornaments, tinsel, and lights as the day Olson decorated it back in 1974. The needles on the tree are yellowing, but they're still there. Needles are kept for a reason, said Olson. He says he thinks it's supernatural. He says Olson said he still hopes that his oldest son, with whom he still talks, will make it home for Christmas one year. And he says, I bet you if my sixth boy comes home, the needles will drop right off. Hmm. Well, in any case, it's just kind of a very curious story. Guy got the same Christmas tree for 40 years.
I wonder if the lights still work.
He's afraid to turn them on, according to the story. It says he's afraid if you turn the lights on, the tree would burst into flames. You know, a 40-year-old Christmas tree. This is like having a box of matches. You know, it's like, but he's got it. He's waiting for his oldest son to come home.
I hope his son
gets there one of these days. Yeah, it's interesting, kind of comical, kind of sweet. Hope his son gets there one of these days.
Yes. And he's 89 years old, so.
Yeah, it'd have to be. We're talking about his.
He's 89 years old, so.
And his sons, they have to be pushing 70.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got to be in their 60s.
That's a long time. You wonder why his son never traveled to Washington.
Well, he was apparently wounded so badly. I don't know. Maybe he can't travel. I don't know. So I don't. You would think he would have made it by now, but I don't know. Who's going to say?
I think we're heading into break.
I think we are. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
It's good to hear the music back. Another week, my favorite day of the year, January 2nd, will be is just around the corner. But during the break, I looked up to see the number of Silver Eagles sold for the mint this year so far. We still have a few more days left of the year. 44 million, just slightly over 44 million for the month, for the year so far. So, new record for Silver Eagles, and we do have them available. Remember, you can lock in the 2015 Silver Eagles for delivery in January if you'd like to do that. We have boxes of 500 available, and our offices are closed. We opened for the program today. But you can give us a call and leave a message at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Gave all the employees off. I'm such a good boss. But Russia.
Me.
Russia.
Wait a minute.
I'm not your boss.
All the rest of the employees are off.
I'm not your boss. Nah.
Well, come on. Well, that means I'm my boss.
Yes.
I just may decide to take off today.
Let's talk about Russia first.
All right. What about Russia?
Russia, they are emptying their banks, their stash of foreign cash. Just try to stop the ruble from plunging. And certainly the crisis that is threatening their economy so far, that the central bank has burned through more than $110 billion in foreign currency supplies. That's more than a quarter of what it has in reserves right now. Their total international reserves, which also include gold and other liquid foreign assets, had fallen to $393.9 billion by December 19th. And, of course, we have seen them ramp up the past couple of weeks, particularly earlier this week, and they have blown through more than $21 billion. So, again, they're working to try to keep their currency from collapsing. Russia is working on a plan to pump 1 trillion rubles, which is $18.6 billion, into Russian banks next year. And they want to try to establish a deposit insurance to guarantee savings up to 1.4 million rubles, which is only $26,000. And the ruble climbed nearly 6% against the U.S. dollar today. And last week you had a local bank that collapsed. And the rates the Russian banks lend to each other have jumped. Overnight rates are now nearly 19%. So it does show you just how serious their funding crisis has become.
I listened to an interview by Greg Hunter of Paul Craig Roberts, former Secretary of the Treasury under the Reagan administration, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under the Reagan administration. And it's really a spectacular interview. I recommend anybody on the listening right now, you're going to have to go up to YouTube, find Greg Hunter's USAWatchdog.com, find his most recent interview of Paul Craig Roberts, because it's almost stunning in the points he makes. The coherent presentation is really... it's really a step up. I listen to Paul Craig Roberts whenever I get a chance, but this is a step up. And he's talking in part about what's happening in Russia. And he's just saying, look, there is no economic reason for what's happening in Russia. This is happening. The dollar is being, or excuse me, the ruble, according to Roberts, is being shorted either by private hedge funds run by George Soros, for example, or by the United States government, but they are shorting the ruble and shorting it. And he says, whoever's doing it is not concerned about losing money. Right? They don't care if they lose anything. And he says that almost certainly points to the United States government and or the Federal Reserve, because they don't care. Lose it, we'll just print more. But his contention was that Russia's currency is being driven down not by normal economic events. He points out that Russia is a solvent country. They're not deeply in debt, all right? Certainly not like the United States. They're able to support themselves. They have income coming in and the rest. And he said the only way this works is if someone is essentially bombing the Russian ruble the same way that they have bombed gold in the last couple of years. And he said, one of the things he said is, Paul Craig Roberts said, this was that we're coming to a moment in time where either the free market is going to reassert itself, and the ruble, for example, and gold and other commodities or whatever are going to rise in value, or we are going to have to admit that market manipulation, that the government of the United States has such extraordinary capacity to manipulate markets, not just here in the United States, but around the world, that a new form of economic tyranny is established in this world, and we're going to all, there's no point paying attention to classical economics anymore. Doesn't matter what the supply is, doesn't matter what the demand is, doesn't matter what the interest rates are. One way or another, the federal government will determine what the prices are going to be. Roberts is not, you know, he doesn't think that's going to happen. He doesn't think we're going to see the moment when we have to admit that the government is able to run the whole scheme across globally. He doesn't think that's going to happen. I don't either.
Well, to some degree, they already are.
Well, to some degree, but it's like anything else. To some degree, I can fly. I just can't land. You know, I can jump out of an airplane and fly. Watch me. Ooh, you know, but I don't know how to land, and there's the problem. You know, sooner or later you get down to earth, you come down to earth, and, you know, you either crash or you land, and I can't, I'm going to crash if I'm trying to fly from an airplane all by myself.
Yeah, we get that.
Same thing is true with this government. It has an opportunity to fly for a while, but how long can it hold this together? And there's the question. And how long will the rest of the world even allow it to hold it together? You know, one of the things Roberts indicated in his interview, and is that we are literally at war with Russia right now. It's a currency war. It's not a hot war where people are launching bombs, missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles. There's no nukes that have been detonated, but these are acts of war. If Roberts is right, what the United States and or these private hedge funds are doing to Russian ruble, these constitute an act of war. And you have to assume that sooner or later the Russian people and Vladimir Putin are going to sit up and say, wait a second, this stuff's got to end. And they're going to do something. They will retaliate. What do you think they're going to do, Melody?
Well, I mean, it's probably the same folks or
what they could do is they could shut off the energy supply to Europe.
Well, yeah. I get that they can respond. However, I also believe that the same group that, if we're talking about a group that is shorting the ruble in order for it to drop, it's the same people who I believe made our oil prices rise to 150 and then also to bring it down. You see them everywhere. And that, to me, I still believe that was a major impact on breaking our economy at that point in time. It was critical. It was a critical point. And because we had the banking problem, the situation with the Lehman's and so forth. But that was critical because it brought our trucking industry down. It made a big, huge changes to the psyche of the people. People couldn't afford $4 or $5 gasoline, and it had a huge impact. And I believe that what's really what propelled us, you know, to the huge collapse, even though there was other things that were going on at that point in time, the subprime and so forth. But so you have the same group of people, the elite, whatever you want to call them, and going here and there. And, you know, there's wars everywhere. I mean,
I understand. What does it mean? What does it mean? And what does it imply for the future? I mean, we're coming into increasingly dangerous times. And although some people are sitting around, the economy's recovered. Oh, the United States economy is going great. I was talking, or I was listening to Roberts in that interview. And one of the points he made is that for the millennial generation, and I believe that's from something like 20 to 35, somewhere in that neighborhood. He said almost 50% of them are living at home with mom and dad. And he says this is absolute evidence that the economy is not in a state of recovery. These kids can't find a job where they can make enough money to get their own apartments. You understand? And I can tell you that in your 20s, you are not interested in having mom and dad in the next room when you're bringing your girlfriend home. All right? This has got to impede their style. If they had any way of getting their own places, they'd have them. And he's talking, says it's like 47-48%, according to a recent study of the millennials. They can't even afford their own place. This is evidence of an economy that is not running well. It's certainly the kind of evidence that's consistent with being in an economic recession or even a depression. And yet, government's saying, everything's going great, and a lot of people believe it. I think those you know, the claims, hooray.
I mean, look,
happy days are here again. I think the claims are false, misleading, deceptive, fraudulent, criminal even. And I think sooner or later, the truth of the matter is going to out. I don't think, no matter how the government runs this, they may be able to run the markets, but what do they do about natural resources? They can't make gold just jump out of the ground. They can't make wheat grow. They can't make it rain. Sooner or later, their market manipulation is going to confront. It's going to contradict natural reality in a way that just can't be papered over. And when that happens, something's going to give, and it won't be natural reality, in my opinion. You know, it's going to be, the government's going to, uh-oh. Yeah. Good. Another article here. Did you want to say something about that, Melody? Do you want to add something in there?
No, that's fine, Al.
And we've got another article here that's on pensions. And this is consistent with the idea that there's trouble headed our way, and especially headed toward the government. This is from the Washington Times. It says, the coming pension meltdown. For outrageous government scam of the year, it's hard to compete with the news of supersized public employee pensions. Public employee pensions in California. If you haven't already heard, in 2013, an assistant fire chief in Southern California collected $983,000 pension in 1 year. A police captain in Los Angeles received $753,000. These are exceptions, but nevertheless, they are bizarre and hard to understand, hard to imagine, hard to believe. By some estimates, the unfunded pension liabilities in California have eclipsed $750 billion, which means that in a few years, residents will be paying their already highest in the nation income and sales taxes, not for roads, bricks, schools, or public safety, but for retired employees. Right? The same scandal is happening in most states. The crisis dates back 20, 30 years. Public employee unions negotiated fat pension deals. Politicians went along with it, knowing it was a bunch of crapola. It couldn't possibly be sustained, but the politicians knew they'd be gone before the stuff ever hit the fan. They give us an example. Scranton, Pennsylvania recently raised its property taxes by more than 50%. They're expected to rise. That was in 2014. They're expected to rise by another 20% in 2015. The city also had to raise various fees, such as the charge for garbage collection, by two-thirds. The taxpayer costs are skyrocketing because the city's auditors calculate that police and fire pension funds will be completely depleted in 3 to 5 years. Scranton finances are so tight that late last year the city auditor put out an advisory memo to city agencies that, quote, only in the event of extreme emergency can a purchase be made. Meaning they're not spending a dime unless they absolutely have to. Homeowners are getting squeezed, services are going up, taxes are going up, they're getting less services. Don't be surprised as more leave Scranton. All right? People are simply walking away from the debt. They're packing their bags and say, look, we can't afford the taxes, which is to say we can't afford the pensions. We can't afford that debt, so we're going to pack our bags and we're going to get out of Scranton and move someplace else. And the people in the police departments and fire departments are saying, well, we got a deal and you got to pay us. Well, listen, the deal was ill-advised and foolish. And before this is done, if people keep leaving Scranton, the police department, the fire department, their pensions will be all of the vacant properties abandoned in Scranton. Mayor requested the unions, you know, the public employee unions, help keep the city afloat by renegotiating. Unions said no. Another option is declare bankruptcy. It would force the unions to renegotiate and take a loss. But the crisis isn't going away nationwide. Public employee pensions are running between $1 trillion and $5 trillion in the red, depending on the rate of return expected from stocks and bonds. What's the point here? This is just another evidence of government that has gone too far, right? And it's not something they didn't just go too far under the Obama administration. They've been just riding this economy like their private little donkey. And they think they can make the donkey do anything they want it to do and pay whatever they want it to pay. And we're going to see a situation in the near future when people are just going to say, no, I can't do it. I can't pay it. I can't get you the money. What do you think is going to happen to these public employees or retired public employees when they find out, guess what? You're not going to get the amount of money you counted on. They're going to scream and they're going to shout, but they're going to deal with that problem because the money's not there. It can't be paid. Therefore, it won't be paid. Government's in trouble, and it will drag us all down if we're not careful. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. It's Frank Stefan on the piano. We'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We've got two callers. Ken from Minnesota is first. Ken, what have you got for us?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that the money is going to fail and very soon. And I can prove this by, if you go to YouTube and you type in healing can be yours and you listen to that video, if that doesn't prove what I'm telling you right now is absolute truth, nothing on this planet will.
Well, what does healing have to do with the money system? How does that relate? Hello?
When you see the video, you'll understand.
All right. All right, Ken. Thank you. What'd you say the name of the video was again?
Healing can be yours.
Healing can be yours. Okay. Those of you that are interested, take a look. Ken, got another call. Jim from West Virginia. What's up, Jim?
I thought I'd mention something here. After listening to many people in third world countries tell their stories of economic crashes and IMF riots, blah, 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 I'll give you one. I can't remember exactly where, but there was a massive crop failure one year. Fruit, I think, but I just don't remember. And this one other time they had some plant go down or something, and all of a sudden the currency just went to nothing insofar as imports were concerned. imports became very expensive. People got upset and rioted. Now, I'm under the impression that the Rothschilds have their controlling fingers in something like 150 state banks,
mm-hmm.
you know, counterfeiting operations, central banks. And the whole idea behind the one world currency was that they could set the rates, exchange rates, between countries because they exerted so much financial influence. I believe what these people are doing, and I'm surprised Paul Craig Roberts didn't say that also, but I do believe that what's going on is they're picking them off the countries one at a time by playing, manipulating the exchange rates. And the one entity in this world which would be most desirous of doing this, their name is Rothschild, I believe. So for whatever reasons, they're going to take Russia down, believing they can do it to Russia, they can do it to us or anybody else. But I think they've been playing this game for decades.
I agree.
Not only playing the game, but setting the game up. If they're playing the game, as you're alleging, and I think they probably are, they're not just playing, you know, gee, what happened now? Let's make a counter move and see what happens. You're talking about a strategy that has potentially been in it's been designed for perhaps 50 years.
How about 100?
Maybe more.
Yeah. So what it boils down to is they'll use any excuse to crash the currency on a country they want to bring down.
Yeah.
So I was pretty sure, I've been wrong many times, more often than not really, on calling shots, but I was pretty sure the 2008 crash was going to trigger the same thing, that it would bring forth a fleeing of the capital out of the United States. You know, I thought that was what was going to happen. But now I do believe this whole deal of the one world currency, sure, we'll have the Federal Reserve notes here, and there'll be pesos down south. But the central banksters will set the rate of exchange between these currencies as opposed to the people and supply and demand. So I'm just kind of surprised Paul Craig Roberts didn't say that. Well, I'll let you fellas go, and I thank you again.
All right, Jim. Thank
you.
What else have we got, Melody? Here's something from a guy named El Arian. Businessman Muhammad El Arian. I see his articles from time to time. I believe he's the head of a major corporation, and I can't recall which one it is.
He used to be the second, well, pretty much top in PIMCO. He left, and then Bill Gross left PIMCO, and you know, which is the biggest bond company. But go ahead.
Well, he's got an article here in Business Insider, and where the headline is, "Traditional Factors Alone Don't Explain This Remarkable Year for U.S. Stocks." He's saying there's something's up. All right. Now, he doesn't come out. This is an interesting little article because he's polite about it. He doesn't come out and get in your face and say, look, the SOBs are manipulating the whole system. But he does raise some interesting points that imply that statement. He says, this has been a remarkable year for U.S. equities, not just in terms of the handsome return for investors, 15% for the Standard & Poor's so far, but also because of how this was delivered. This is a market that in 2014, this past year, has registered 51 record highs.
Make it 52 after today.
Yeah, well, as measured by the Standard & Poor's Index. That's an average of one a week, the most since 1995. Never had more than 3 days of consecutive losses. And he says he thinks that's a new record. Consistently decoupled from potentially damaging historical correlations with other markets, most notably government bonds and commodities. Now, what he's talking about here is the stock market typically responded to external stimuli. All right? If the price of crude oil suddenly dropped or suddenly rose, the stock market would react accordingly. And as long as the price of crude oil was going up or going down, the stock market would react accordingly. He says, no, that's not happening. It has consistently decoupled from potentially damaging historical correlations with other markets. And he goes on, he says, that it's always managed to recover quickly from sudden and scary air pockets. We've seen just in the last couple of weeks, the price of on the Dow Jones average dropped $900. I believe it was in a week or 10 days. Went back up 700, or not $900, 900 points. Went back up 700 points in I believe it was 3 days. The point is something strange is happening here that has virtually never happened before. This market is too good to be true. And he doesn't say that, but that's the implication. What else has he got? To explain the impressive market equity performance, we also need to appeal to other factors, specifically to central banks and the deployment of idle cash. Throughout the year, central banks have remained equity investors' best friends. And what he means by that, central banks, like the Federal Reserve, have played a central role in supporting the equity markets. Fearing spiking market volatility as much as risk investors do, they repeatedly, meaning the Federal Reserve, repeatedly responded to periodic market jitters through a combination of reassuring statements. Janet Yellen just said the word patient last week, and the economy and the stock markets jumped. She says a word, and they think, oh my gosh, you know, where's the reality in this? This is just bizarre. But the reassuring statements, and in the case of foreign central banks, further monetary policy easing. What he means by that, foreign banks are printing more money, printing more currency. Japan's doing it. Europe's talking about it. The United States was doing it up until October, if I recall correctly, when they terminated. They finally tapered off. But the government had been, or the Federal Reserve had been, printing $85 billion a month, and then they just tapered off to nothing, I believe it was in October. We were doing it. Now the other banks are still doing it. He goes on and he says, well, he says in part that if, he says that the markets will continue its spectacular rise if central banks continue to make sure that happens, and if there is a vast sum of idle cash able to be invested in the markets. He talks about this a little bit in relationship to mergers and acquisitions. And he says, one of the interesting things, he says, there's been significant increase in mergers and acquisitions this last year, with the vast majority of transactions taking place well above prevailing market prices. How odd. These mergers and acquisitions are when one corporation is buying or merging with another corporation. And according to Ilarion, he's saying, look, this is odd because the corporations are overpaying when they buy these other corporations. And you have to wonder, this is interesting because major corporations don't pay a nickel more for anything that is absolutely necessary. So why would major intelligent corporations tend to overpay for whatever companies they were acquiring in 2014? In broad strokes, the answer has to be that these major corporations had access to so much capital that they didn't mind spending like drunken sailors on shore leave. They may have even been encouraged to do so. But where'd the excess capital come from? One answer is ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, the Federal Reserve. Interest on loans was so low that banks were inclined to lend only to the very best creditors, and that would be major corporations. Corporations, therefore, had access to cheap money, and they borrowed it. And they weren't too particular about how much they had to borrow because the interest rates were so low. Enough, even though zero interest rate policy stimulated major corporations to borrow, we might still ask, where'd all the extra cash come from? Foreign investors? Profitable U.S. corporations depositing their money into the banks? Or did it come from fiat dollars printed by the Federal Reserve during quantitative easing 3? One implication in all of this is that given the QE3 printing of fiat dollars, given that it tapered off to nothing in October, if I recall correctly, will the same overflow or excess capital be again available in 2015? Because if they don't start QE4 up, the spectacular performance we saw in the stock markets this last year isn't going to happen. They're going to either have to start QE4 and hold interest rates down, or the two factors that were key to building these impressive gains, they will not survive. They won't hold together, and we can expect a lower, lower numbers index on the stock market indexes. Now he didn't say everything that I've, that's my opinion, the implications of what he's said. But I think the main takeaway on his article is that the markets have behaved irrationally throughout 2014. They are not responding to reason. They're not responding to external events. You know, we've talked about this on the program. We had problems. All of a sudden, the problem came up in the Ukraine and the Crimea. We had problems with ISIS in the Middle East. We had problems jumping up around us, and yet the markets just continued to sail along as if nothing was happening.
Caller.
We have a caller?
We have a caller.
All right. Well, let's take it. Ivan. Ivan. How you doing, Ivan?
Yeah. Well, belated Merry Christmas and a happy and prosperous New Year for both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I have a comment about, you mentioned earlier that our government is a credit to fascism or so. I would say it would be more communism.
Yeah.
I would equate the 1% to the oligarchs of Russia, who are probably 1% or more. And they were there since the communist revolution started in 1918 and so on. So I think we have more, and I lived under both regimes, and I would say we are closer to communism than fascism. But that's my humble opinion, because, like I say, the oligarchs do control their factories and so on, and banks and so on, just like the oligarchs, or you can call them, you know, whatever, Rothschilds here. It's the same type of people, what I guess Jim was talking about earlier. And so that I just wanted to bring it out as my point. What do you think about it?
Well, I have an opinion that most people would think is at least bizarre. Right.
Okay.
I understand that democracy is a collectivist form of government fundamentally identical to socialism and communism. And a lot of people sit back, well, that's crazy talk. No, it's actually not. But it requires some understanding that we're not going to be able to communicate in the next 60 or 90 seconds. From that perspective, I would agree that we are perhaps more close to a communist system than we are to a fascist system. It goes to who the sovereign is and whether or not it's the individual people or whether or not it's some collectivist entity. And in democracy, that's what it is. The sovereign is the collective. It's not the individuals. Again, long story, can't be explained here at this time, but I am inclined to agree. I wouldn't object to the idea that we are closer to communism than to fascism, but whatever we are close to, it's not the Republican form of government that's guaranteed in our Constitution. Our Constitution does not include the word democracy. It does guarantee a Republican form of government to the states of the Union, and yet we are fighting in foreign countries for democracy. Some people should be able to look at that contradiction and say, wait a second, something's going on here. We're fighting for something that's contrary to our own constitution. But, Ivan, we're also fighting for time, which we are out of. So Melody and I will be back on Monday. We want to thank you, Ivan, for giving us a call. And want to thank all the listeners for listening. And hope you'll tune in again on Monday. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, producer, and Ivan. Talk to you, folks. Bye-bye.
Work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's you.